perfection. I just can't get no perfection. All I want to do is be perfect for you, buyer. Know that tune?
I don't know that tune.
It's a Rolling Stones song.
Perfection?
Yeah.
How do I not know that Rolling Stones song?
It's not called Perfection. It's called Connection. Early Rolling Stones. But
I've heard it.
The topic's on my mind a lot.
Well, with Perfect Listing coming up.
Well, yeah, plus...
Perfect life that you've lived?
Do you have a perfect life?
No. I have three children.
is perfection even attainable?
Absolutely not. Right. Not on this planet.
So what's the point?
Right, so you just have to enjoy yourself.
Maybe striving for perfection, knowing you never get there. Very Buddhist, very Zen.
Is that Buddhist? Is that what they strive for?
Well, strive for perfection that you know you never get.
Not everything can be perfect in life.
Well, we got to strive for it at least when we're doing business.
Exactly, and when we're doing the podcast.
And when we're we lost that battle a long time ago. And when you're creating the perfect listing,
which sellers will hear more about. I'm Brian Burke.
And I'm Griffin. This is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information and inspiration you need to start, run, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. Hey, thanks for filling in for Alan this week, Brian.
My pleasure, Griff. He's down in Austin at a community conference, so our listeners get me this week.
Should be interesting. So, Brian, what's up for this week's episode?
The theme of this week's episode is the perfect holiday listing. And to that end, on our main story this week, mm-hmm. we have eBay seller Monica Gamboa. Many of you have heard Monica in the past. And eBay Vice President of Seller Experience, Harry Temkin. Monica and Harry will have a conversation on the topic, the perfect holiday listing.
Ah, perfection. But we should mention here that any advice or best practices for the perfect holiday listing will work for any eBay listing all the year round.
Correct, Griff. And I believe you captured some seller tips and advice on the same topic at the Chicago eBay Upfront last week.
Oh, I was so busy. Yes, in fact, I did. We heard from a lot of sellers. They sat down and talked to us, and we'll hear a few of those interviews in the second half of the main story.
What else do you have for us this week?
Well, Brian, you remember that we recorded a lot of great interviews with sellers at eBay Open, yes?
I do, Griff. You were chained to the podcast table for over 2 days interviewing attendees, and I have to say, I think we barely gave you a chance for a bathroom break.
Yeah, but I did take a few bathroom breaks, thankfully for everyone involved, and a few snack breaks, and we were situated near the food court, so I can run over and grab lunch.
You were a trooper that whole week.
Well, it was well worth it. And this week, we'll talk to eBay Shine Award winner Elijah McCloskey about his passion for vintage bicycles and how he leveraged that interest into a business on eBay that ties in perfectly with his charitable organization. It's a really good interview. Don't miss it. And did we get any calls this week, Brian?
Yes, we did. A big thank you to the sellers who've called in on our hotline and left their questions. We picked three questions to answer this week. That's coming up later in the episode, but for now, it's time to review the news with the segment we call The Buzz.
This week on The Buzz, we have community reactions to the recent seller update, the fall seller update for 2019. And I believe community is your wheelhouse, Brian, isn't it?
It sure is, Griff.
So, in the community, what's a buzzin'?
There wasn't a lot of volume on the discussion boards for this seller update, at least not as much as past updates.
Wow.
We had about 6 discussion threads and only about 21 replies, which is really low.
And that's just regarding the update itself.
Just the update.
There's some topics we'll talk about.
Yeah, we get 2 million users a month coming into the community, so it's a buzzing place there too.
By the way, where do you go to see all this?
community.ebay.com.
So if you're interested in partaking in the community and you never did it before, that's where you go.
Exactly. And a place to go get information as well.
Okay. So what do you got?
Along with those threads, here are the topics of the week. The user agreement update has generated some confusion within the community as changes are not outlined specifically.
Where does one go to find and read the eBay user agreement?
So in this particular case, because it was a change, we included it in the seller update. So they can go to eBay News on community.ebay.com and get to it there. They can also find it at the bottom of the homepage. There's a direct link to the user agreement.
All right. So if you want to get more detail, you should always read the latest version anyway.
Definitely.
Okay. So what about managed payments? What about that? Is there discussion about managed payments in the community?
There's been discussion about managed payments, I think, since we introduced it a year ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, and as more and more sellers come on board to manage payments, I think we'll continue to see some buzz there. Mm. Some community posters have asked us for a timeline for managed payments enhancements with details like, you know, how will they use managed payments for purchasing shipping labels, using the funds from their sales.
Mm. That's all in the works.
It is. Yeah. And those announcements will also be announced on Seller News as they come forward. Some of the other big ones we've heard is, when is it going to support Global Shipping Program?
Yeah.
Those things are coming later this fall or early next year.
Just read the Seller News and you'll get all of this when it happens.
Yes, definitely.
What else?
We also had some posts regarding the new growth tools.
That's in Seller Update we talked about. Yeah.
In Seller Update, yeah. And the growth tools you can find within Seller Hub as well. Sellers mostly express positive sentiment around the Seller tools, but there's still some confusion around how promoted listings will appear in search, because we did announce a change to how promoted listings will appear, with the organic listing being removed when the promoted listing is present. Sellers are concerned that the reduced visibility result in lower sales, and some misinterpret what this part of the announcement means, seeking clarification on how this impacts non-promoted listings.
Well, let's just talk about it. Your listings are never not available. They're
Correct.
Always there. There will always be one instance of the listing.
It'll either be promoted or it'll just be where it naturally appears in search.
And this is dynamic, this change. Moment to moment, this can change. So sometimes your promoted listing, depending on the ad rate, it'll appear at the top of a search result page.
Yep.
And in that case, it's at the top.
Right.
Your organic version of the listing in search will not be there. But if the buyer then refreshes the page and they get a different sort and your listing is not sponsored at the top as promoted listing, now it appears in organic search.
Where it naturally would have appeared. And as most sellers probably know, if you've chosen promoted listing, it doesn't mean you're always going to have promoted listing, because you can imagine other sellers are also using promoted listings. And so we rotate those promoted listing slots.
And that's what the sliding ad rate is all about. The
Yes.
more you put up for a percentage of what you'll pay for a fee if the item sells, the more often that item will appear at the top of a search.
Right.
It's random. There's no way to game it. There's no way to know exactly when. But the more you put for an ad rate, the more often it will appear. But for those instances where it doesn't appear, your organic version of the same item will appear in search. So your items are never invisible. There'll always be one there.
Correct. And this will alleviate some confusion that we actually saw on the buy side, where buyers didn't understand why the exact same listing was oftentimes, if a seller's done a really good job, they're on the first page of search results. And all of a sudden their item was number two and promoted.
Yeah.
And then it was number six also on the page, and it just caused some confusion.
It caused a lot of confusion.
So this just alleviates that and makes for a better buying experience.
And a better selling experience. You will not see a decrease in sales.
Well, and the other thing I would say there is, if you do have some fear around that, we have 180 million buyers, so test.
Exactly right. There's a lot of discussion when we have a seller update.
There always is. And even though this was light, there still is a lot of discussion.
Sure.
We also saw some discussion around the update topic of inventory optimization, with the sentiment being mostly neutral. Some sellers were requesting guidance when determining a new category for listings where category changes have or will occur, and concerns about where that item will show in the new category structure.
Ah, what else, Brian?
Most of the conversation was about the seller protections and policy updates.
Of course.
Of course. This is something sellers have been asking for. This topic always drives a lot of volume, with many sellers passionately discussing how protections will be applied fairly to sellers of various business sizes and across different categories.
Mm.
One of the more popular threads was one discussing the upcoming $6 credit for top-rated sellers who report a false snag. And this is to help support the shipping cost that the seller has to pay. Many sellers made it clear that this would not cover the average shipping cost.
Of course, the point is, it's not meant to cover the entire shipping cost.
Yeah.
This is you average this cost out. When you run a business, it's about profit and loss. And occasionally you'll take a loss on a transaction, jot it down, look at the next transaction. Remember, it's not, we say this over and over on the show, it's not about the transaction. It's about your entire business over a period of a year, whether that's a quarter, a half, annually. If you start getting mired down transaction to transaction, you'll harm yourself, your own mental well-being, and you'll harm your business.
Yep.
So were there discussions unrelated to the seller update, Brian?
Yes. And as you can imagine, there were a lot of discussions around Hurricane Dorian.
Yeah.
Conversations primarily focused on the progress of the storm, projected areas of impact, and members sending well wishes to those in its path. I should point out that eBay's recent announcement on the announcement board in Seller News addresses protection concerns and has been shared by many members to address some of the questions raised.
Right.
Our hearts go out to those in the Bahamas.
Yeah. Anything else, Brian?
Yes, we saw some great feedback around eBay's latest advertising campaign. Most are pleased to see eBay ads on TV as it promotes the eBay brand and brings more buyers to the site. But a small group raised critiques of the ad.
Oh, really?
Yeah, mainly the one around promoting lower prices makes it feel like they cannot compete with sellers that are able to discount items lower than retail.
Well, what are we supposed to do, advertise higher prices? We charge more than anyone.
I don't think Susie and our advertising team will ever go there, Griff.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it works, ultimately, right?
Yeah, ultimately. Right. Yeah. Instead of solely focusing on new items, some would like to see a variety of used and new being advertised. Mm-hmm. And we've heard this in the past as well.
Okay. Oh, you know, before we end, you mentioned the Bahamas, Brian. We should also mention that there is an ongoing humanitarian crisis unfolding in the Bahamas, and you can help us help them by donating supplies or cash to the relief effort. And you can do that by going to www.ebay.com/e/charity/Hurricane-Dorian-Relief. Again, another wonderful eBay URL.
Yes, a little too long.
But it could have been ebay.com/Dorian.
Yes.
That would have been good. But no, instead it's www.ebay.com/e/charity/Hurricane-Dorian-Relief.
The one nice thing about this one is that you can see what kind of inventory they need,
yeah.
And you can actually purchase it from other sellers on the eBay platform. So you're not only helping someone in the affected area, but you're also supporting an eBay seller.
Good cause. And by the way, I've seen photos of that area of the Bahamas. They need everything. It's basically nothing there.
Scary.
Nothing. Well, thanks again, Brian. This is all great information. Thanks again for filling in.
My pleasure.
Up next, an eBay seller and an eBay VP discuss what makes up the perfect listing. Today on The Main Story, we're going to talk about the perfect listing for holidays. And we have with us Harry Temkin. He's the Vice President of Seller Experience. Welcome, Harry.
Thanks so much, Griff. Great to be here.
And also joining us is Monica Gamboa. She's a seller under the user ID, The Posh Hanger. Welcome, Monica.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be back.
We're going to talk about the perfect listing. And we say for the holidays, but actually the perfect listing is important all year round.
Absolutely.
So, Harry, why is the perfect listing even more important for the holidays?
Well, as you said, I think it's not just the holidays. It's all season long. But look, there's 1.3 billion listings on the platform. And so you want to make sure you have the best quality of listing possible, right? So that you appear as in many searches when buyers are looking for your product. There's four main components to a perfect listing, as we like to say. One is title, obviously. Mm-hmm. The next is item specifics, just as critical as title. The next is high quality photos of the listing. And finally, really having the right price.
Monica, how important do you put on creating the perfect listing? I know that you take a lot of pride in your selling on eBay.
Absolutely. It's everything. The perfect listing, in my eyes, is the accurate listing. And we want to create the accurate listing because we want to product match the right product to the customer. The more relevant and accurate the listing is, the easier it is for our buyers to find the right products.
I've always said the perfect listing is the one that the buyer, there's not a single question they need to ask. Everything
That's
about
great.
The listing is right.
That's
there.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you know what that means, Griff.
What does that
it means
mean?
You've given us the perfect title. You've given us all the item descriptors, great photos, right? It's all of those things.
Let's talk about title. Why is it so important and how should sellers approach it, Harry?
That's the first thing that buyers see. Title's what shows up in SRP, search results page. It's what shows up in view item. It's like the best descriptor of your listing before they get to any other part of the listing. It's crucial that you really do the best that you can in describing your product. The challenge is you only have 80 characters. So you have to make the best of the 80 characters. I use an example. My son and I sell a lot of Adidas Yeezy sneakers. And in the title, obviously, you want brand. You want Adidas. You want the style, which is the Yeezy 350s or 700s. And then after that, it's critical to have the color and the size and the gender. Now, you might ask why. Well, particularly in sneakers or shoes, size is critical. You don't want a buyer having to literally do lots of clicks to figure out if that's the right size or the right gender of what they're looking for. Putting those key item descriptors in the title is better for you, better for search, and it makes it easier for the buyer.
Monica, how do you create a title based on these important components of the title? What's important to you? Like, what do you put first when you're selling fashion?
Yes. I look at it like your title is prime real estate. There's 80 characters. I am not going to be using filler words. I'm going to be using actual descriptive keywords that a potential buyer is looking for. So I try to front load all the most relevant keywords, which is generally how people search. So it is the brand, the size, what it is, and the gender. And then everything else after that, I kind of call it the supporting cast, which would be like the style, if it's a dress, a fit and flare, the color, lace trim, the style of the neckline. You want to make sure you're using those 80 characters to make sure that it is providing the most accurate listing.
You mentioned something about filler or fluff words. What are some examples of those?
Amazing.
Right.
Great.
It was stunning. I see
stunning.
That.
Stunning. Glamorous. Because most people aren't going to type in search.
Exactly. Yes. They're not going to search by those words.
No, so. They're going to search for...
Do you know what happens if you search on something like glamorous?
Now you got me wondering.
You get tons, you get millions of listings. There's nothing that ties them together.
Right.
Wow.
So it's impossible search words.
Exactly right. And that's why, you know, you're just burning up valuable characters in the title by using words like that. You're better off using purely descriptive, what we call aspects to describe your product.
I like this change, by the way, because we used to say specifics. Now we're using the word aspects.
No, wrong way. We used to call aspects. Now we're calling them specifics.
Oh, we used to call them aspects.
Either way, they're one and the same. Right, right. Item descriptors, aspects, you know. Whichever you prefer.
19.2 is saying specific.
By the way, that's Liz in the background. Yes. I may not edit her out.
Yeah, she's great.
She is great, and she's right. I mean, look, either way, item specifics or aspects, whatever, however you want to refer to them, they are just as critical as your title. Yeah. And we're going to talk a little bit about that, I think, Griff.
They're describing words.
Exactly.
So why not get into that? Because we got an idea of the title. I love the idea of the things you should leave out. We've been saying this for years, by the way. So things like look... or rare, or lots of punctuation.
Yes.
Like people search on fives, exclamation points.
Hey, Griff, let me just take a second and stop you. Right. So when you talk about look, actually, which is an item descriptor, right, for fashion, the reality is that's the fifth most searched item specific by buyers in fashion.
Are we talking about the L @ K?
He's talking about the actual word.
I'm talking about the actual word look.
Oh, there's an actual brand?
There's an actual aspect called look, right? When you are describing fashion.
Yeah.
And it is the number five most searched aspect. And so it's super critical and important. And when you look at what we announced at eBay Open and talking about how we've redesigned the listing flow, look used to be at the bottom of item specifics, right? We didn't organize the item specifics in any relevant order.
Yeah, I remember that.
Right? And so now what we've done is we've exposed all the buyer demand data to sellers. We're showing them how often buyers have actually searched for those aspects or item descriptors in the last 30 days. And data shows us that look is number five.
Wow.
And so instead of it all being at the bottom of the listing flow, we've moved it right to the top.
So what's an example of look? Because that's the label. But what's the actual item specific? Someone would say like look is a type of dress. Like
it could be, am I confusing that with occasion maybe, which is summer.
Oh, a summer look.
A summer look, something like that.
Right, because people would be searching for it, especially when it comes to things like apparel, women's apparel, like dresses.
Right, and style.
Yeah,
style is a big one.
Right.
For example, in dresses, fit and flare, sheath, shift. So that is really important.
There were recent announcements, Harry, that you talked about at eBay Open, and they were about item specifics or aspects, especially how they're going to work for the holidays. But why are they so critical now?
Well, they've always been critical. Right.
But now they're hypercritical.
They're hypercritical because there's things that our sellers need to understand of how these affect search. So when you put aspects in your title, obviously they're fully indexed in search. But if you think about other ways that buyers are using the site to search for listings, as in, say, the left-hand navigation or the aspect guidance or the new features that we announced called Pivot in the mobile app, none of those actually will return your listing unless you provide the item specifics as well. So a great example is, let's say that you put color in your title, but you don't put color in the item specific itself. If a buyer searches using the left-hand navigation and filters by color, your listing will not appear in those filtered results. Yeah. So this is critical. Even though you've put them in the title, you also have to give them to us in the item description section of the listing flow. And here's another really, really important fact. When sellers are giving us their item specifics, these descriptors, the drop-down menu has a preset list of defined attributes. And a lot of times what you're listing isn't defined in that list. It's called custom. We want you to give us that custom aspect, that custom item descriptor. But here's the thing. It doesn't get indexed in search today unless you put it in the title as well. So for any item descriptor that is not in that already defined list for whichever aspect it is, you must also give it to us in the title if you want it to be further indexed in search. Now, over the course of the next several months, we're going to do what we call graduation, and we're going to move those custom defined values into the defined list.
All of them are just the ones that are most popular?
We are going to take a huge portion of them today, the most popular, and then eventually index them all.
Oh,
okay.
Wow.
But in the first couple of months, it'll be the most popular ones. We have to do things like eliminate not availables and N/A and things like that.
Yeah.
But again, I just want to repeat this for our sellers because it's so, so important to further index your listing and ensure that you have every possible ability to show up when buyers are looking for your listing. Whatever you put in your title, you want in the item-specific section as well. And you want to be sure to give us other item specifics. The ones that are the highest ranked ones have the most buyer searches on them, because again, we're showing you what's relevant to a buyer. And then if you are providing a custom aspect, you want to also make sure that's in your title as well.
Monica, are you using item specifics pretty much across the board?
Yes, I've been using them consistently ever since they populated there, because I've been selling for a long time. And I've always looked at it as an and, my title and the item specifics, and not either or, which I know kind of those of us that are eBay OGs that have been listing from back in the day, item specifics came up later.
Yeah.
So I think there's this feeling that, oh, it's either or. I've got it in the title, so I'm covered. I think what eBay is doing a great job of is really relaying to us that no, it's not or, it's and. This is a marriage. Both
yes.
have to happen.
And to,
exactly.
You know, and to Harry's point, I was talking about my experience this morning as a buyer. If I'm searching for blue, green, and red shirts, for example, which I do every day, right? I'm wearing a blue shirt that I got off of eBay, and the buyer hasn't put a color, they end up in a place that I call not specified hell, which
mm-hmm.
means it may be the perfect blue shirt I'm looking for, but I am not going to go and click not specified in the item specifics. I'm only clicking those colors, and I'm not seeing your shirt. You've got an active customer with money mm-hmm. who may want to buy your shirt, and you've just locked me out.
And I think a lot of times the sellers are in repeat mode and they're going so fast,
yeah.
they're thinking, oh, I want to get up 20 listings today. It's 10 o'clock. I'm going to go fast. And then the quality suffers, and you want the quality listing. So you're better off doing two or three higher quality listings
Perfect
than
listings.
20 Absolutely. Where you're skipping through the item specifics.
Could not agree more, Monica. And listen, we recognize that the listing flow has a lot of item specifics. In some cases, mm-hmm. there could be 40 there.
You could, yeah.
And that mm-hmm. is overload. We're going to show you what the most relevant to buyers are.
Right.
We're going to move them to the surface. We're going to separate them from the others. So there's going to be a required section, then the recommended section. We know that time is valuable for you and
right.
the rest of our sellers. We don't need all 40 or whatever the number is. If you just give us the required and recommended, that alone will give you much better search visibility.
But the fact that it's now auto-populating based on making a strong title, when you get past the photos and down to the item specifics, you can pretty much almost all the time hit accept all. So it's not like you're even having to go in there and spend 5 seconds per item specific. You're literally just clicking accept all.
Yes, we are now effectively automatically looking at your title, and where we can ascertain that there is an aspect in there or an item descriptor, we will mm-hmm. automatically populate it in the correct item description field in the listing flow for you.
I'm selling off my vast cologne collection fragrances. I have 2,500 bottles. I hope to have just 100 within a couple years. It'll take that long. If there's an earthquake in our neighborhood, you'll be able to find my house in a moment. But I've discovered with this automatic fill-in, you know, the autofill for item specific, mm-hmm. that how I put my title together mm-hmm. helps eBay determine whether those are accurate.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen where they've said, well, here's the brand, and the brand, is, it will say spray. And I'll say, no, it's not spray. Then, wait a minute. Spray is too far to the left in my title. I need to make sure that it's the brand, mm-hmm. then the make of the cologne, and then the size. And when I make my titles like that, I see the autofill is accurate.
You're absolutely right. If you align your title correctly like that, putting brand first, then style, then gender, then color, then size, it does make it easier for the what we call the automatic extraction or the aspect extraction capability to work better. And I want to point out to sellers, look, we recognize that sometimes it's not going to be perfect. It'll get the majority of them right, but the ones that it doesn't get right, we are asking you effectively, please go down to the item specific section, check your specifics. We'll get a lot of them right. The ones that aren't, you have the ability to easily fix them.
Something you haven't spoken about is the number of searches that you appear in.
That's a great call, Liz. See, that's why I have Liz to remind us of these.
We should just get an extra mic.
I know. So yes, what Liz is talking about is the lightning bar. It's effectively showing you that as you fill in each of these item specifics, how many more searches your listing is eligible for. How many more searches are you exposing your listing to? It's an example. Look, I think, was maybe a couple of 100,000 searches. So when you fill in look, you'll see your lightning bar add that number. At the end of adding all these item specifics, you could be eligible for 500,000 or 600,000 more searches than you were before.
Check current listings that you haven't updated the item specifics and then see what your traffic is. Now go update them and see if your traffic changes.
And I'm glad you brought that up because that's one of the tasks that I do every day. I go and I look at what I call my stale listings. Yeah. You can sort them by views, which would be zero. Why doesn't this have any views? So I go in and I edit. And if it's a listing that I haven't touched in maybe a few months, because now we're all good till canceled, since the item specifics have rolled out, it will then auto-populate suggestions. So then I go, okay, I'm going to add this, I'm going to add this, and update it. Maybe I need to tweak the price while I'm there. So it definitely gives you more things to look at and update your listing. And now I don't have the search, the lightning thing there yet. What do you call it?
The lightning gauge.
The lightning gauge yet.
For our B2C users, we're at 50% ramp. Actually, based on seller feedback, we made a couple of modifications to the extraction service. Yeah. And so we've opted to roll that in before we roll out the rest of the users. And that should be happening in the next week or two.
Yeah, but I have noticed that. So I go in and I revise them, update them, add those extra item specifics. And some of those now have more views than they had before, more watchers.
Any sales?
I do get sales off of them. So yes.
Same here. I had some old shirts, old Hawaiian shirts that were just sitting there. And I went in last week and did this very thing. I did adjust the price a little bit, but I noticed
I usually do that.
The traffic went up for them and I made sales.
Yes, you will. And look, I think this is, relates directly also for those of you that use promoted listings. Mm-hmm. Listing quality is huge, particularly when you want to promote a listing because there you're paying to promote it additionally. Right. And before you do that, you want to make sure you have the perfect listing. You want to make sure you have all your item specifics because it'll help its positioning for sure.
The other things that we wanted to talk about were photos and pricing. Those are two important attributes to the perfect listing as well. And I know we're going to talk about these attributes in more detail in the coming weeks. How do they all work together to create the perfect listing?
Well, look, photos is obviously what allows your buyers to see your product.
Yeah.
And when I am buying, I zoom in on every photo. And I can tell you that, again, the experience of my son and I selling sneakers, he knows exactly what position to put the sneakers in. He takes pictures of the inside of the sneaker. He takes pictures of the sole because there's specific patterns that people look for. So he takes very high quality photos of that. For your title photo, we suggest doing a really high quality photo with a white clean background because the title photo is what shows up in the search results pages. It's what shows up on view item. It's the first photo. Also, for searching on eBay, you know, we announced several years ago about using image search for our buyers that they could take a picture of something and easily find it. So having a higher quality photo that we can identify what that product is works better with the image search for buyers. And then outside of eBay, as you know, a lot of the search sites like Google want a white background to be able to index that in their search. Having those high quality photos, the title photo with a white clean background ensures that it maximizes your search engine optimization.
Yeah, I find that nothing instills trust more than knowing that the photo is as professional as possible.
A buyer has more trust in the seller when they can see very vivid, clear photos of what they're buying.
They're verifying the information you have on your listing.
Perfect. Yeah, that's a perfect way.
So look, the fourth point.
Pricing.
Right, which is price. I mean, you can have the best title, you can have all the item specifics, and you have great photos, but if it isn't priced right, you're obviously not going to sell. So the key is...
You're opening a museum.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the key is to understand how to price your listing competitively. We recently announced the launch of TerraPeak with Inside Seller Hub. This year, we announced that all store subscribers above Basic have free access to Terapeak Now. It makes it really easy to do all of your price competitive research, be able to look at listings for the past year now. So not just 90 days, but a full year of history. Having it all right there, natively embedded into Seller Hub, and to easily go between that and your listing to figure out how you want to price competitively is key. Again, it all goes to that efficiency play.
So much easier though.
I'm seeing when I'm listing an item in some categories that eBay is suggesting a price based on not just the title, but on item specific. If I have a CD and I say it's very good, mm-hmm. not new, but very good, it'll show me all of the lowest price for very good CDs. And instead of me having to do the research, I could say, oh, I'm just going to be a few pennies below that because I'm always undercutting on my CDs.
Exactly right. And in Terapeak, we have a really cool feature called the Title Optimizer, which effectively showing you the value of keywords in the title, how other listings have sold when they've had those words in there. All the work that we're doing around item specifics, it's a natural play to now make Terapeak available to the item specifics as well. So not only will it be able to search all listings on title, but it'll be able to search listings on item specifics as well. And that's coming in the fourth quarter. It's going to open up a tremendous amount of content and data when you're searching in Terapeak, and not just be able to help optimize from a pricing perspective with keywords in your title, but also the value of giving us the item specifics as well.
Exactly.
So very powerful stuff.
Right. You don't want to end up in not specified hell.
No,
you do not. To show up.
This is, you know, we're, this That's is the jail. Specifics of item specifics, as we like to say.
Specifics
of item specifics.
Well, I want to thank you both, Monica and Harry, for stopping by to talk to us on this episode, which we were talking about the perfect listing.
My pleasure. Great to be here.
We've been listening to Harry Temkin, Vice President of Seller Experience, and Monica Gamboa. Monica, Harry, again, thank you so much. Back in July at eBay Open 2019, we had the pleasure of speaking to quite a few eBay sellers who stopped by our podcast booth in the main hall. Let's listen into one of those interviews now with 2019 Shine Award winner, Elijah McCloskey. Here at eBay Open, we're talking with all of the Shine Award winners. We're going to meet a new Shine Award winner. His name is Elijah McCloskey, and your user ID, Elijah, is?
Freewheel underscore bikes underscore Madison.
Madison.
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, of course.
Yeah.
I just want to be sure. Great college town.
I love it.
A little cold in the winter, but.
You know, if you sell on eBay, you can go travel to Florida or.
And do you?
Croatia. I do. If you've got a good team, you can definitely travel a lot when you're selling, because you can work anywhere there's internet, you can work remotely. If you've got a good team taking care of your shipping and like day-to-day stuff in your store, you can totally travel for a month.
Elijah, what do you sell?
I sell vintage bicycles, and we use them in order to pay for giving away bicycles to those in need. We've given away over 13,000 bikes to those in need in the last 16 years.
Wow.
Largely paid for by eBay sales.
And this is your charity then?
Absolutely, yes.
Is the business totally charity? Is it 100% charity? Is it, do you also?
I mean, we make money. Like, we make an hourly wage, we make a salary, like, we pay the bills, things like that. So we do for-profit activities, and people do get paid for the work that they do.
How many people work for your business?
There are 9 employees.
9?
Yep, and we have a brick-and-mortar location, and we're opening a second location in the fall of this year in partnership with the City of Madison, which we're very excited about.
Now you've piqued my interest. Vintage bicycles aren't all that easy to find these days. How do you source vintage bicycles?
That's actually one of the easiest parts. I do a lot of trainings, and I talk to a lot of people about how to succeed on eBay. And the biggest tip that I can give you is become an expert in your field. Take the 5 years, the 10 years, the 15 years to really know a topic or a vertical that you're passionate about. And once you have that, people just bring product to you.
Oh, they do. Yeah.
Absolutely. They'll call and they'll say, hey, I'm moving. I want to sell all this stuff. You buy a garage full of bikes for $600, and then that'll turn into $6,000, $10,000 in sales over the course of a couple of years with your labor and everything built into it. People just drop off literally hundreds of bikes a month out of front.
Now, how did you get interested in this charitable cause?
When I was 16, I was homeless because I had problems with my family, and I came back to this organization, actually, that existed for about a year, and they helped me build a bike for free. And then I used that in order to get a job, and then I used that job in order to get an apartment. And the stability from the apartment eventually led to me getting a business degree from UW-Madison, starting a bunch of businesses, doing consulting. I came back and became the executive director, started them selling online, got them the 501c3 and everything like that. The other piece was when I was in high school, before I became homeless, I was in a bunch of like AP economics classes, and I really had this like intuitive understanding of the supply and demand curve, where some people are willing to pay a lot more than something's worth, and some people are willing to to sell for a lot less than something's worth. And so I got into Craigslist kind of in the early days,
sure.
You know, doing good work there. And I worked with Craigslist for about, you know, maybe 10 years. And then they became very hostile to professional sellers. So I stopped using it. And so those two pieces, like the economic side of things and then also the personal experience that, like, transportation access can have a really radical effect on people's lives. It gives them the opportunity to do well in school. It gives them the opportunity to succeed at work, to find housing, to make it to their probation appointments, you know, whatever it is that then leads to a path of personal and professional success.
You seem quite young, and you said this started for you when you were 16. And
so
you...
I'm 31.
Oh, okay.
And the organization had been around for a year.
All right.
When I came by.
Are you a part of the organization?
I'm the executive director of the organization.
Okay.
And then there's a board of directors. And like I said, you know, there's 9 people who work with the organization, and then about 100 volunteers, and then a whole city of excited bike people. And then all over the world, we have supporters. You know, I'm seeing donations coming in from Europe, from various parts of the United States this week alone, just because of the promotion from the Shine Awards, the visibility there, and then also other media outlets that we've spoken with.
Can you think of a success story that comes to mind that you could talk about of how your charity has helped an individual?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there were these two brothers who came in. They're in their mid-20s now. They came in just as kids. You know, they were 12. They were messing around with bikes, trying to learn how to do stuff. So we do free classes at the space. We had 12 classes this week. We teach about 1,000 people a year how to fix bikes. And they just came in and were playing around with stuff, fixing bikes, figuring out how to do this and that. And the one brother ended up training up for years and then working with us as a mechanic and then working at another place as a mechanic and then starting to sell bikes on his own. And then the other brother, he started flipping bikes on his own and started selling on eBay because of the skills that he had. But he also started getting really interested in, like, small engines and machining and, like, things like that. And so he started a business that sold lawnmowers and repaired and serviced lawnmowers and snowblowers and things like that. Did that for a while, and then eventually went to school for both automotive repair and welding, and then he became a welding tech at a theater control company, and he's making very good money.
That's fantastic. You
know, based off of, like, all of these physical hands-on skills that we were able to teach him, coupled with, like, the customer service that you learn by being a seller on eBay. And we always encourage people to sell on eBay because, like, sometimes people say, like, aren't you building more competitors by doing that? And what we do is really difficult. And the more good sellers there are on eBay, the better off we all are, because it keeps bringing the customers back over and over and over again. So I love to see new people getting on eBay and doing it right.
When you meet somebody who's new who wants to start on eBay, what's your first bit of advice? I mean, what's the most common question you hear? And then we'll go to the advice.
I mean, there's a lot of questions. Time management, people can get into it pretty easily. Like, what do I start selling? And a big advice there is look at stuff around the house that you don't need. Put it up, 99-cent auction, 7 days, actual shipping and handling time, and just get a feel for the experience.
Yeah.
See how it goes. Make your mistakes on things where it's okay to lose money. Get that first 50 sales or so. Get your limits raised. And then start thinking about, you know, play around with a bunch of different verticals, a bunch of different niches, and start thinking about what you want to specialize in. Because all of the sellers that I know that have done really well, that have high margins, that have stable businesses, that can't be eaten by big competitors, that can't be eaten by people who are willing to devalue their time,
yeah,
are specialists.
So it's really important to find a field and just get to know it inside and out.
Absolutely. And work for somebody else who really knows it, you know?
Are you passionate about bicycles in your personal life? Do you have a small collection of them, I assume?
I only have 3, actually, right now, which is pretty low. I've been working on that. N+1. You know, if you're a bike person, you know that joke. But yeah, I mean, I do a lot of long-distance touring. I rode the whole Blue Ridge Parkway. I've ridden Madison to Detroit and back, Madison, Minneapolis and back, Madison, Chicago and back. And so, you know, I really enjoy riding, you know, 70 miles in a day, 100 miles in a day when I get a chance. It helps clear my mind. It helps get perspective on big decisions. And it's great for physical fitness. And so I do really enjoy that aspect of bicycling.
There's a lot of interest right now in modern mid-century Americana, antiques, articles, items. What's hot right now in bicycles?
When it comes to vintage, USA made is always going to be great.
Like Schwinn.
Like Schwinn or Trek. Absolutely.
Trek. Yeah,
really strong. You know, if you've got a USA made Trek, it's probably worth some money, maybe $100, maybe $200, maybe $4,000. Do your research, look at solds, go into the forums, those sorts of things. Even basic Schwinns, Continentals from 1977, if you market them correctly with the date that they were produced, and accurate information, you can get $100 to $200 plus shipping.
Wow.
Basic entry level.
Because those weren't very expensive bikes to begin with.
No, they weren't. But they're classic. They're made in the USA. They have good design. There's a retro nostalgia to it. I mean, one of the biggest tips that I tell like kind of mid-level experience sellers is if you can put a date in your title, do so.
Yeah.
Because people will buy it. Because it's the year they were born. The year their kid were born.
Right.
And those people are going to be a lot less price sensitive. And then again, never compete on price. Don't compete on price. Compete on quality of service. Compete on information. Compete on delivery time. Compete on customer service. Compete on the breadth of products that you have available. If you compete on price as a smaller seller, you will always eventually lose.
Words of wisdom, Elijah. Well, Elijah, thank you so much. And keep in touch with us and let us know how you're doing a year from now.
I will. Absolutely. I'll be here.
Elijah McCloskey, and the business is freewheel_bikes_Madison. Thanks again.
Thank you.
You've got questions? Well, we've got answers. And joining us again this week to help answer your questions is our co-host, Brian Burke. Welcome back, Brian.
Thanks, Griff. I'm happy to assist. Between the two of us, we should have some answers to the questions.
You'd hope.
Having, 40 years of experience here at eBay. What do we have this week?
Well, we have three questions, Brian. These are callers that called into our number at 888-723-4630 and left their questions for us. Let's listen to the first one first.
That makes sense.
Hey, Griff. This is Paul with Real Cool Surplus. Doing bulk shipping, taking things to the post office or having the post office pick them up. Since we're getting busier and going into the fourth quarter, I would print the labels on all my packages and then take them to the post office to have them scan them. Is there a way that you can print all your labels on your packages and then have the post office just scan one label and it has all the batch in there? If you could explain how to do that, that'd be greatly appreciated. Thank you very much and great podcast.
Thanks for that question. So let's talk about this, Brian.
Two things that they can do. Print out a scan sheet.
Right. And that's when you're in the bulk label print flow, you can print out a scan sheet. But there's a little bit of change to that we'll discuss in a minute, by the way.
Well, you might know some details that I don't know.
I do.
And then the other thing, if they have enough volume, they really should consider contacting their post office for pickup.
Why go to the post office and stand in line?
Save that time to be listing or responding to your customers or thinking about what other inventory to list.
You can get free pickups if you schedule them a day in advance, but the time is when they arrive. So you'd have to have everything ready for when they arrive.
Right.
If you want to schedule a pickup a day later and you want it at a specific time, then it costs $25. The postal clerk usually will come at the time they deliver mail. So if you know that, you can have all your packages ready. Just alert them the day before you want a pickup. They'll scan that scan form, pick up all your items, and it's all free. And then you don't have to make that trip. You can spend that time listing items, fulfilling items, enjoying your life, and not standing in line in the post office.
Exactly. And it's 50 listings for each scan sheet.
Right. And the change I wanted to talk about is in the past, there were people who would have like a series of listings that would sell. They'd print out a scan sheet, but that was a scan sheet for just those listings. And then they'd have to do another scan sheet if they sold more. Now, if you want to have a compiled scan sheet at the end of the day, you can go back to the print label flow, find all the labels that you printed for the day, and then print that one scan sheet for all those labels.
Does it still have the 50 max?
Yeah, it's still 50 max. Right?
But boy, is that helpful, because if someone thought they were going to do all their shipments out at 2 p.m. and they print the scan sheet and they get another order in and they were able to fulfill it, now they can very quickly just add it and it's still on the same
single scan. Yeah, that's a good
sheet.
One. Well, let's listen to our next question.
Hi, this is O Goody Sale. My question is, how would you go about pricing with your team, paying them, you know, hourly rate, a percentage? That's my question. Thank you.
Brian, what's your thoughts on this?
Well, first I'll say, if he's got employees, I mean, it's a nice problem to have as an eBay seller. I think there are a lot of our sellers that are just out there by themselves doing it all. Obviously, how much you pay is dependent on a few things. What are your state laws or your local county laws around minimum wages and things like that? But then also, what's the competition? Think about what's the type of employee that you want and what are the tasks that they're going to be having to do? And then think about what other comparable things would they be looking for jobs out there for?
Yeah.
It's going to be variable by location. And it's going to be variable by what you're going to be asking them to do.
There's a lot of sellers I've talked to who don't hire as an hourly wage. Some do. Some hire by contract. what they'll do is they'll revert to the 1099 form, which is, I need someone for the holidays to work for me for 6 weeks taking photographs. Or they'll hire on a contractor to do that job at a set price. I'm going to do 1,000 photographs. Here's how much I'm willing to pay you. And this is how long this is going to last.
Yep.
And that's easier to plan for because you can say, I have the budget to cover this and I have worked with this person or I've heard that this person can do the job. Sometimes they'll do a trial period of a week just to see if they can handle it. So there's various options.
That's a good approach.
And you always have to plan out. Your business has to be able to absorb the cost and result in an efficiency and an increase in your business operation velocity that results in more profit, more gross sales.
If you're going to ramp up for the holiday like that, also think about, what are you going to do the week or the 2 weeks after the holiday?
Exactly.
Because we all know returns are part of e-commerce. You're going to have to manage those. So you have to think about, has your velocity gone up so much that you're not going to be able to manage that? So do you keep them on for another week or two? Or is velocity high enough for you to manage it?
Now, I hope we answer your question. I'm not so sure we gave you a specific. That's impossible. But these are some of the things you need to consider when you're hiring help for your business.
And planning ahead's a key one.
Oh, yes, it is. So here's our last question. Let's give a listen.
Hi, this is Damon in Kodiak, Alaska. My user ID is PatchyFogCo. That's my eBay store. I have a question about eBay stores and when are you ready to get a store? When are you ready to get the more advanced versions of the store? Thanks. Love your guys' podcast.
This isn't really that hard, Brian, is it?
No. First off, I would say if you're thinking about doing any level of like consistent sales on eBay, you should consider opening a store. You'd get some access to some other features. You can consolidate everything into your store. You can point people from your own website and such back to that store as well. So there's ways for you to more easily manage your business on eBay.
Right.
Each step of the store is dependent on, again, your velocity in your savings. If you're just starting out and you're big and you think you need lots of support from eBay, boy, maybe paying us the fees for Anchor Store makes sense.
If you know you're going to list thousands of listings.
And if you feel like you need a lot of support because you get a higher level of customer support with that level of store service, there's those trade-offs. But ultimately, you need to look at how many listings are you putting up. And kind of a rule of thumb is if you're halfway to the next level, you're probably pretty close to a point where it's more cost effective for you just to go to the next level.
Right. And the key here, as Brian said, is the number of listings you put up every month.
Yes.
So if you're only putting up a few hundred, like maybe 100 to 300 listings, a basic store is going to be economically your best bet. You don't want to pay the extra store fee for the number of listings you get that you never use. It could be cost detrimental to you. Pay attention to the number of listings you got up. I'd love to have 2,000 listings up on the site. That would be the time when I would think, all right, now I got to save some money. I got to go up to the next store level.
I'm assuming this caller doesn't have a store today.
No, he said he has an eBay store.
Okay, probably a basic store then.
Yeah.
The other thing to remember is for any listener who's out there who doesn't have a store yet, start at the basic or even start at the, what's the new one called?
The starter store.
Yeah. Start at the starter level. You can always move up. But if you've subscribed for the year for the store, moving down is harder.
Right. So if you're going to subscribe to the next level as a test, always subscribe on a month-by-month basis to make sure it works for you. Because if you subscribe to the annual one and you get that discount, if you unsubscribe before the year's out, you'll take it. There's a penalty for the lowering of the subscription.
Yeah, and actually, I like your suggestion on just go month to month. It's a little bit more expensive, but it allows you to test as a seller to see if that's the right store level for you.
Exactly. Well, I want to thank everyone, all three of our sellers who asked us questions this week. And if you have a question that you would like us to address on our podcast, just call our magic podcast hotline number. And by now you must know what it is, even though I forget it occasionally. 888-723-4630. Call it, follow the prompt, state your question, and we just might air it on an upcoming episode.
And it always helps to have your question ready before you call. Maybe even jot it down.
Oh, you're so organized, Brian. Hey, shall we wrap it up?
Is it time to close the episode?
Yeah.
So soon?
Yeah.
I was just getting warmed up.
Yes.
I don't know if I'm going to let Alan back.
Yeah. You were finally getting warmed up, Brian. Just took almost an hour. And that's our show for this week. Thanks again, Brian, for filling in for Alan.
Thanks, Griff. What's on tap for our next episode?
Well, on episode 59, it's all about the details, and we're going to take a deep dive into what does and doesn't work when it comes to titles, descriptions, terms of service, and, of course, especially photos, when you're putting together the perfect listing for holiday or all the year round. We'll also have a discussion with Casey Kempton of Chubb on the importance of disaster insurance for your small business. Now, if you want to join the fun here on the eBay for Business podcast, you can be a part of the show when you call us at 888-723-4630.
Or you can email us, if you prefer, at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
Don't wait for an eBay up front to come to your town. Go find a local regularly occurring eBay seller meetup in your area today. Right now, just do it. At seller meetups, eBay sellers share tips, selling stories, and small business insights all over a little nosh and beverage.
And sometimes even eBay employees visit as guest speakers.
Like, for example, Brian Burke.
I have gone to some.
A few, I'd say. You can see upcoming meetups on our special eBay community page for meetups at www.ebay.com/meetups.
And if you crave more eBay for Business infotainment, don't forget to tune into our weekly live video stream hosted by Audrey Tracy on the eBay for Business Facebook page every Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. Pacific time. Just click over to facebook.com/eBay for Business.
And right after the live stream, you can hop, hop, hop like a little bunny over to the eBay community page for our weekly chat with eBay staff. It starts every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific time. Go to communityebay.com and select weekly chat with the eBay staff in the drop-down menu for discussions. And that is the eBay for Business podcast episode for this week. And the eBay for Podcast team consists of
Special Correspondent Jen Deal,
Associate Executive Segment Producer Doug Smith,
Marketing Strategist Liz Austin,
my co-host this week, Brian Burke.
It was wonderful to be here.
It was great to have you.
Editor-in-Chief Griff.
And this is the eBay for Business podcast, which is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411. Now we ad-lib, Brian, just like with
Again? Yeah, we ad-lib?
Yeah, we ad-lib.
It was a really good show.
I thought you actually did really well.
Well, thank you.
I think you gave Alan a run for his money. Sorry.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
But I don't have the accent.
No. You could get it if you learned.
Well.
If you tried.
I'd have to go back to Ireland and drink a little bit more Guinness.
And then you'd never come back.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know, I guess. And you're too busy. You've got other stuff to do.
Yeah, but I enjoy coming on. And so kind of like once in a while, I'll do the Facebook Live or this.
Oh, I mean, so I can count on you maybe.
Yeah. I don't mind. I think, you know, it gives my ego a boost.
Well, that's all what it's about. That's why we're here, is to get... Never mind my ego.
I'm just trying for my perfect ego.
Yeah. Perfection.
Exactly.
Once again, see, we're bookending the show, Brian.
Very good.
We started with perfection. I just can't. And now we can say perfection. I'm striving to achieve perfection.
The podcast perfection.
Yeah, that's right.
Double P's.